Welcome to ASP Stuff Radio, the internet radio show where we talk about everything and anything from cats to baseball to the unemployment rate of orange chicken consumers. Today is Tuesday, March 14th. This is your host, Albert Roddle. Joining me, as always, from their undisclosed fortresses of solitude and philosophical servitude are Steve Ocrates and Paul Lado. Welcome. How are you guys doing tonight?
Very good.
Good.
Doing good. That intro sounded very familiar.
It did?
Yeah. Why are we still stuck in solitude? I don't want to be in solitude anymore. Because sometimes, technically, Paul Lado is not always in solitude. We'll see a little, you know...
Little munchkin
running around the back. So we know he's not in solitude.
That's true.
I would expect some cats in the back from Alboradol's background, but I never see them.
So not locked out. Not complete solitude.
Yeah. But it's philosophical servitude.
Oh.
That's definitely in play.
So we're serving the masses on philosophical thought.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't copy word for word on Paul Lado's intro spiel from last episode because I changed it. Instead of saying we talk about anything and everything, I said everything and anything.
So it wasn't plagiarized.
Not completely. I changed things up a little bit.
We're going to have to get a lawyer. We need a Trump lawyer
to yeah.
compare how long yours was versus mine.
Kind of like
a stack of papers versus a smaller stack.
Was that the... the comparing Trump's healthcare plan to Obama's healthcare plan.
That's exactly so what Trump's that, lawyer
that's
would
a
do.
Brilliant logic. So here we have...
That is it.
Obamacare is thick volumes worth, like Tolstoy War of Peace. Thick, yeah. Long, arduous, painstaking read. So it must be complicated.
Yeah.
But
wait, Trump, did they actually do that?
Yeah. I
missed that one.
Here's a big stack of papers. This is Obamacare. Look how long it is. Therefore complicated. But Donald Trump's healthcare plan, it's a little tiny pamphlet. So it's clear and straightforward and to the point, and it's great health coverage.
I'm sure there was a Colbert joke in there about how Donald Trump, everything's small when it comes to Donald Trump.
Including his hands.
Including his hands.
Wink. Yep.
And wink. We know firsthand about his hand.
Those hands can hit a golf ball 285 yards.
Yeah, we'll have to get into the healthcare bill at some point.
Yeah.
We
have to get back into the nitty-gritty politics.
None of this fluff baseball stuff.
I want to talk about that.
Well, we're appealing to the Giants fan base, so we have a niche audience.
Yeah, a large audience of Giants fans tuning in tonight.
Speaking of Giants fans and baseball, we need to get right into our main topic. Well, continuation of our topic from last episode where we, was it the game where we had to predict what Bochy would pick for the 2017 baseball season? The 25-man roster?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So Paul Lado and I have already done that.
Yes, one of Bill Gates' UFOs sucked me up for half of the episode.
So yeah,
I'm back.
But you're back. So we would like to hear your take on what you think.
But everyone has to, if you want to hear Alboradel and my take on the roster, you'll have to tune into the last episode.
Yeah, so do that right before you continue listening to this episode. Make sure you review our picks. So, Steve Ocrates,
let's hear your
roster pick.
My starting rotation, Mad Bum is number one. Cueto is two, no surprise. I think I have this reverse, but I still had Shark for some reason three, but I believe Moore will take his place. So three and four, Michael Moore? No, Matt Moore.
Michael Moore. The filmmaker?
The filmmaker.
I don't know if he's fit. For that.
Bartolo Colon can pitch. I'm sure Michael Moore can pitch.
Michael Moore.
Well, his heart probably isn't fit.
Number five, I don't think I picked the right one, but it's Suarez.
Andrew.
Albert. Suarez. No, so that's Albert Suarez. So what do you guys think of that?
Paul Lado chose Matt Cain as a fifth.
Well, I was going with who I think.
Oh, right. Pick.
I don't know.
Well, I'm kind of going with what he thinks too. I think Alboradel went with who he.
I went with my wants. What I wanted, but not. I don't think I played the game right.
That's a little that's a different approach. It's all right.
Who do you want Bochy to pick?
Because I would have gone with Ty Block. But.
Yeah, I think I would have. Now that I think about it, you do make a good point about the Doyers and his ability to get the Doyers out.
Yeah,
it's a big deal because you face the Doyers like 18 times or 20 times or something in a season. That's a big chunk. Yeah, they can't hit left-handers, right?
But Albert Suarez was good last year. And he's
reliable.
Yeah.
But it's the whole left-handed pitching factor. And did do a good breakdown over the weekend of the reason for the significance of having left-handed pitchers.
But it's a matter of whether Ty Block can be consistent for the whole 160.
That's a good point. Right. So Albert Suarez has already proven himself over. Well, I mean, he was there for about half the season, right?
Yeah.
So the rest of the lineup is. I do have Matt Cain in there because he's this sympathetic, emotional pick.
In the bullpen?
In the bullpen, like a long reliever. Guerin, Contos, Law, Melancholy, Melanson. I didn't realize Smith is. Will Smith, the Fresh Prince, is on the DL. And then Strickland. I think I'm missing a left-handed guy.
Yeah, you don't really have
no lefties.
No lefties.
How are you going to deal with the Doyers?
No, we can't deal with the Doyers. We got to sit somebody down, send somebody down to the minors.
No Ty Block, no Josh Osich.
But still.
I got to review this with the management. Let me take a look at this with Rags. I don't think he's going to like stuff.
Well, I mean, I think if I had to replace somebody, it would be Block with Suarez. And then I think I put Osich. Who could I put Osich for? Smith right now? I don't know. How can I somehow get rid of Matt Cain?
Gotta cut him.
We can't get rid of Cain.
Actually send Matt Cain down. Sorry.
I think Yoda's trying to say something.
What do you want?
Cain's a he's a homegrown Giants.
Wow.
I know he sucks. Sucks he is, but fan-like.
It's
like a caveman.
Yoda, Louis Armstrong combination.
So I might have to, and I actually do have Osich crossed out.
Yeah.
So. Oh, we'll see how much you regret that.
I have Block crossed out too.
So we'll have to get back to you on that one.
And for my catchers, I only have two catchers. I didn't realize Hundley was in there, was part of the Giants now. So I still have Brown. Obviously, Posey. The good point is Brown did have the break up a no-hitter way back when, towards the early part of season last year. He hit this big home run, and that let them win the game.
Against
Stripling.
Was it Stripling?
Oh, the Dodgers. Yeah. I remember that. That was early in the season.
Way early.
For one of the first games.
That was his one big hit. He might have had another big home run. That's why I kind of always remember. I was watching that whole game, and I was really upset because nothing was happening.
But the key, I think, for the Giants this season is consistency.
That's the word of the season.
Consistency.
With what?
Everything. Yeah, first half, if you're going to have good hitting in the first half, make sure you have good hitting in the second half. If you have great relief pitching in the first half, then make sure you have that in the second half.
If you could just figure it out.
If you're not having any injuries in the first half, don't have any injuries in the second half.
That's like the insightful thing that
if Casilla makes a mistake the first time around, make sure you don't put him in the next time.
I mean, so you don't have those platelet moments or a couple platelets go through Bochy's head.
Yeah, but I don't mind. I mean, it's sort of worked for them having these really good first halves and then sort of crappy second half.
To build a cushion.
Just last year's second half was really bad. 2014, they sort of weathered that storm.
I mean,
so I don't mind the hot first half because
weird how the Giants' first half was historically good
for the 2000 last year. Yeah.
Yes, they set a record.
And then they set an abysmal
record.
And then
they set another record. The second half.
So
opposite direction.
Yin and yang.
Yin and yang will balance each other out.
Hope. Hey, you want Huang on the team? Who?
Huang seems like a good addition.
He's got some pop.
Yeah.
Got that big uppercut swing.
Whoosh.
South Korean swing.
Why do you have to be so racist, Paulito? What are you saying about South Koreans?
Are we
Lilocrates disagrees with your bigotry. All right, anyway, so to continue with your...
Okay.
So you got your catchers.
And then my infielders, Belt, Panic, Nunez, Crawford, Gillespie, and Tomlinson.
Paulito did not pick Tomlinson. He picked Jim Rollins.
Yeah, I went with Jimmy Rollins.
Jimmy Rollins.
I just think Clark Kent has had enough Superman moments to earn his spot. Then again, why would they bring in... There's no reason they would have brought Rollins in if they weren't going to actually put him in there.
They brought Rollins in. They brought... What's that other veteran? Aaron Hill. He's there. Of course, they have Gillespie. And they have a lot of veterans.
Yeah, having options is the problem that you want.
Well, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, there you go. Are you burping? Bruce, you okay?
Sorry, I had a chicken bone stuck in my
chicken
throat.
Bone. He had a wishbone.
Too much steak.
All right, so I don't know. I just think if you have like a veteran guy start, maybe, you know, he'll get hurt halfway through the season, and then you just bring up Kelby Tomlinson second.
I mean, I think
wear out the old man the first half. Bring in the youth.
Yeah, but see, that's a slap in the face to Tomlinson. Honestly, that's why they brought him in, was to sit Tomlinson down. He was reliable. I mean, what was
keep
his average?
Was kryptonite.
Like 270 or something? It's not like he was hitting over 300, but he'd get those key at-bats. Gillespie's a professional. He's the consummate professional. I mean, out of
true
all
giant.
The Giants, he's a true giant, very professional. He won't take it personally if he's got to move around that.
Did you say consummate?
Consummate, yeah.
Isn't that make complete by having sexual intercourse? Consummate?
How does it?
Commiserate. Is it consummate, like a verb, like to make complete? A marriage.
I think consummate just really means
to make complete,
solidify an agreement.
Yeah, but I guess it's mainly used in to refer to.
Yeah, that's true. In the medieval times, you consummated marriage.
Let's consummate the marriage.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's hear your outfielders.
So outfield: Span, Pence, Gorky's.
Gorky's. I just have to say it like
that. Corkies.
Parker. And before I realized...
Parker?
Yeah, Fidgety Parker. Before I realized that Morse was going to go off with home runs, I didn't know he was going to do that. I have Mac. But now that Morse is really stepping up, I don't know if you've noticed, he's been on a roll with home runs, I think.
Yeah, he's playing for his life, his career.
Mm-hmm. He needs to prove... everyone that he's still relevant.
So maybe that would be the one thing I would cross out is Williamson.
And then don't forget there's this guy Chris Marrero who's hit a few home runs this spring. He's sort of like a younger version of Michael Morse.
Does he have long hair?
No. He doesn't have that, but he's same type of, you know, all or nothing type of hitter. Although Morse can hit for average.
Well, actually, that Marrero, he's like leading. He might be leading or be one of the top hitters in the Cactus League right now. So he's making a case for himself.
Marrero.
So
Marrero.
Interesting how Gorky's. We just kind of assume Gorky's is going to be in there, but he's got that defense.
Yeah, if it weren't for that spectacular catch, probably wouldn't consider him.
Consistency and depth. Those are the two words of the season.
Depth?
Depth.
Would you like to elaborate on the depth part?
You need more than just the starters to be able to fill in. You need a strong bench.
Okay.
Strong minor league team. So if some like Panic gets hurt, which he usually does, you have more than just Kelby coming up. You have somebody else who can fill in. I don't know. Maybe it is Jimmy Rollins or I mean, they do have a lot of infielders. And then another guy who's coming up is Christian Arroyo. He looks really good.
Christian Arroyo.
Be ready if anybody gets hurt, like third base, second base, he'll be ready to fill in.
He's third base?
Yeah, they're making him play third base.
Okay.
Normally plays shortstop, but if anybody gets hurt,
so they have
he performs well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he looks just like Buster Posey at the plate. He pretty much has the same approach. He even has the same type of body
DNA. Hitting a baseball.
I don't know. Don't you just see it and swing?
Yeah, what's
see
there?
Ball, to, hit ball, run like crazy.
Yeah, what goes on in the brain when you're hitting a baseball? I wanted to tie this in with some Zen Buddhist principles to hitting a baseball. So we can look at it from a scientific standpoint and a philosophical standpoint. But let's play the NPR clip first.
To hit a pitched baseball is considered one of the hardest feats in sports. Batter has just milliseconds to figure out how fast the ball is thrown, where it'll cross the plate or not, and if he'll swing or not, and how. A couple of neuroscientists are studying the brains of baseball pitchers to measure how they react to pitches. Jason Sherwin is co-founder of DeServo, a company that specializes in high-speed decision-making. He joins us now from New York, the capital of high-speed decision-making. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been working with a couple of major league ball clubs?
That's correct.
So I know you can't tell us the names of the teams, but what kind of work do you do to figure this out?
Well, what we do is we're looking at, on a neural level, how batters make decisions on recognizing pitches or recognizing balls and strikes. And we do that by looking at the brain activity when they're deciding on pitches that we simulate for them on a video game.
Can you explain to us how the brain works when a ball is thrown?
Generally, what's going on is that your visual parts of the brain are figuring out whether this is a pitch to hit or not. Mm-hmm. And then they have to connect that to the motor parts of the brain. Those are the parts of the brain that allow you to move. And when your visual processing says, this is a pitch I want to hit, it will then connect to the motor parts of the brain that allow you to then swing the bat and hopefully make contact with the ball.
And how much time are we talking about?
I mean, from release of the pitch until it gets to the plate, 95-mile-an-hour fastball is around 425, 450 milliseconds. Now, on the other side, it takes 150 milliseconds on average for a Major League Baseball player to get their bat around. Mm. So we're really shaving tens of milliseconds here in terms of in the middle where you have to decide on whether this is a pitch to hit or not.
Are you deciding, or does something else kick in? Is it a learned reaction? Is it reflexes? What is it?
It's mostly a learned reaction. I mean, there's some amount of reflexes, but in this case, it is a learned thing. Nobody is born with a gene for knowing how to hit a baseball, and it's something that's learned over time and is improved with experience.
Now, you know, people have mocked Yogi Berra for years for saying, how do you expect a guy to think and hit at the same time? But he was onto something, wasn't he?
He was absolutely onto something. When we first started doing this work, we started seeing that when subjects were getting the pitches wrong, they were using the frontal parts of their brain too much. The frontal parts of the brain are mostly involved in deliberate decision-making. And when they get involved, they slow down the speed of your decisions. And when you're up at the plate and you're facing 95-mile-an-hour fastball and you got tens of milliseconds, really, to decide on whether you want to hit this thing or not, that's where that deliberate thinking is a problem. Mm-hmm. So Yogi was really onto something there.
Jason Sherwin, neuroscientist and co-founder of DeServo. Thanks so much for being with us.
People who think too much are not good hitters.
Well, that seems to be one of the implied conclusions from that piece.
So Buster Posey does not think a lot.
Not once the ball's released.
So we could see how many baseball players from the Giants who delay or don't react as well and say
Cartel.
That because they have Cartel a slow reaction time, it's because they're thinking.
Yeah.
If you were to attach their brains to electrodes.
Who on the Giants are not good hitters? Is that what we're...
Well, who think too much? Because according to this research...
Well, I think the bad hitters, right?
No, so this is what I think. You have to prepare first, right? You have to be able to know what you're going to do going into the at-bat, but then once you're up there...
He didn't talk about that. He didn't talk about the preparation, right? He just talked about the decision from the point that the ball is released. What's your point maybe like with Buster Posey, what he's doing? Because Buster Posey is a very good hitter.
Yeah, so he knows, okay, going into this at-bat, I'm going to look for this pitch and this count. If I don't get it, then I'll just react. So he'll cut out that thinking time by knowing what he's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Where other hitters just think, okay, I'm not even going to prepare. I'm just going to react. Like Pablo Sandoval was the type of hitter who just reacted, and he would just swing at whatever.
But would you say that he thought a lot, that thinking was involved in his batting?
I think that's why he was capable of hitting so well, because he didn't think. Him, Hunter Pence, they don't really think. They just react. But they don't prepare as much, and okay. That's why they're not necessarily as consistent as someone like Posey.
Is Buster Posey a better hitter than Hunter Pence?
Pauleto?
I think so, yeah. Overall, he is. He's going to be more consistent because he's able to outsmart the pitchers more often. He knows what to look for and has a better approach, where Hunter Pence is more of a reactionary type of hitter. So if he gets a pitch that he can hit, he can do a lot of damage with it.
Who has a better chance of hitting a home run? Let's look at it that way.
Probably Hunter Pence. He's going to react more and just look to hit it hard. And those are the types of guys that you need in the playoffs, because you don't want too many just cerebral hitters who are preparing, you know, just looking for certain things, and it'll just look to take that simple approach. You need some guys who are just going to swing for the fences every now and then and hit one out.
That's why I wanted to bring up the baseball and philosophy book that I have. There's a really good chapter that relates some fundamental philosophical tenets of Zen Buddhism and martial arts in hitting a baseball. And according to the author, Gregory Basham, he says there are 7 key Zen Buddhist principles that can apply to hitting a baseball. So I think Pauleto mentioned a couple of them. So the chapter is called The Zen of Hitting. Here are the 7 principles: relaxation, patience, visualization, practice, self-knowledge. This term in Japanese, kime, means tightening of the mind, and then mushin, meaning no mind.
No mind.
So I think
that last one is no mind.
No mind. Now it doesn't literally mean no mind, not having a mind, but no thoughts, in particular negative thoughts. So if you're worried too much about your performance, how you're gripping the ball or hitting your hitting stance, then this could interfere with your ability to hit well. The no mind, I think, plays a role in describing Hunter Pence, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So not having negative thoughts or any particular thoughts, concerns, or worries that might negatively impact your hitting abilities. And also kime, or tightening of the mind. So again, you're not literally tightening your mind. Instead, the principle emphasizes concentration and focus. Here's a great quote from Bruce Lee on this principle, a great martial artist. He says, "Exclude all extraneous thoughts that are not concerned with achieving your immediate goal. A good martial artist puts his mind on one thing at a time. Like a Zen master, he is not concerned with the past or the future, only with what he's doing at that moment. Because his mind is tight, he is calm and able to maintain strength in reserve. And then there will be room for only one thought, which will fill his entire being as water fills a pitcher." So how do you think that's important in hitting a 90-mile-hour fastball flying right by at you? Tightening of the mind. Would you say Hunter Pence has that attribute?
I mean, I think with Hunter Pence, he's a good fastball hitter. So he's probably looking for fastballs a lot of times. So there's some thought that goes, that some type of preparation and some type of experience that goes along with that. So he knows that that if a pitcher decides to throw a fastball, they're taking a risk because he can be on it.
I think for the most part, Hunter Pence is like that. He does free his mind, you know, like the Matrix.
Yeah.
He clears up his head, and this is when he's in a positive mood, right? And so he can just let it loose, not think, and just go up there, swing, get a fastball, and hit it out. But well, like we talked about, his if he's carrying a lot of that weight to try to motivate the team, I think we saw this a lot in last year's playoffs, that's when he doesn't hit as well because he's thinking too. That's when he thinks too much. He's thinking, okay, I need to hit, you know, I need to do something.
Yeah, no, if you think about it, it makes sense. If he's busy trying to motivate the team, then he probably feels, all right, now this my team is expecting me to perform well. After all, I am encouraging them to hit well. So if I don't hit well, then they're going to think, what do my words mean?
You know, I agree with both of you, but I think also has to do with the confidence level. Like Hunter Pence is, that's the way he's approached hitting all his life, and he, that's what's got him to the majors. That's what's made him a good, reliable power hitter and hitter in general. So maybe, like to your guys' point, that whole emotional draining part, trying to cheer up the team all the time, that takes away from his confidence, and he starts thinking about the whole team is not confident. So why should I be confident? Maybe some of that type of thinking creeps into his mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where you need guys who aren't trying to carry the team, like a Pablo Sandoval or like Juan Ribe. Remember Ribe?
Yeah.
How he would just swing for the fences every time.
No need to worry about.
No worries.
Motivating.
Go for it, let it loose, and he would come up with some big hits, big home runs. So you need guys like that.
Well, I think the Giants are unique.
Michael Morse.
You know, but the Giants, I think, are somewhat unique because they have somebody like Hunter Pence, like a cheerleader. I don't know how
a
many
cheerleader
teams, or what do you call that? The reverend?
A cheerleader. Hunter preacher? Pence, the cheerleader.
Preacher?
The reverend, you know. I guess, yeah.
Yeah, but how many other teams have somebody like that? I think it's pretty, they're pretty unique.
But you need guys that keep it loose. That's why Jeremy Outfelts are so valuable. Javi Lopez's. Michael Morse's, Aubrey Huff's, Pat Burrell's, those types of Brian Wilson. You need those guys to keep it loose, not just motivate, but keep it loose, keep everyone less tense.
So that kind of goes in line with another principle. It's called relaxation. So if you're tense in, I guess, hitting, well, you can apply it to any aspect of baseball, but hitting can become a problem. Tension might include gripping the bat too hard or squeezing both butt cheeks too tightly. If you relax the butt cheeks, then the rest of your body will relax and increase your chances of developing a faster reaction time, also giving you more control.
That could have caused one of their lengthy hitting droughts because all their butts were clenched.
Their buttocks, their maxing the gluteus. Too tense. You relax the butt cheeks and you relax your grip and you better.
Is that in the no, Zen?
Well, not their description of relaxing. But
and it causes constipation.
You're going to be pushing out bricks at the end of the game.
So here's some quotes from Ted Williams, one of the greatest hitters of all time, if not the greatest, from his book, which a lot of current players read, called The Science of Hitting. And he says, "I think you will find as we go along that much of what I have to say about hitting is self-education, thinking it out, learning the situations, knowing your opponent, and most important, knowing yourself." Ah. Lefty O'Doul was a great hitter, one of the prettiest I ever saw, and he always said that most hitting faults came from a lack of knowledge, uncertainty, and fear. And that boils down to knowing yourself. You, the hitter, are the greatest variable in this game, because to know yourself takes dedication. He goes on to say that today that's a hard thing to have, because today ball players have a dozen distractions, they're always on the run. In the old days we didn't fly, we rode the train. So they talked a lot about hitting. You know, we didn't have television, we didn't have a lot of money to play around with. Complete baseball atmosphere. We talked, we experimented, we swapped bats. I was forever trying a new stance, trying to hit like Greenberg or Fox or somebody, and then going back to my old way. I recommend that for kids. Experiment. Try what you see that looks good on somebody else. Try different bats, a bigger handle, a bigger barrel, anything. So you have to know yourself.
Yes.
Get rid of distractions.
That is very important. That is one of the Zen Buddhist principles that Paul Edo nailed on the head. the ancient Greek wisdom, know thyself, can definitely apply to baseball players.
Well, that was Ted Williams, but...
Ted Williams, take credit too. But Paul was reading quotes. Well, it was from a book of that was called Science of Hitting, and that was a quote from Ted...
Okay. By Ted Williams.
By Ted Williams. So if you're aware of your own strengths and weaknesses as a batter, then you're more likely to be selective of the pitches you receive. So if you know yourself as a batter, then that means you're in control of almost every batting situation. You know when, where, and how to hit. I think I mentioned this in the last episode. Marco Scudero comes to mind, and his ability to make contact on the pitches he knows are good for him to swing at, because he knows himself as a batter. He's aware that he's not a home run hitter or a power hitter, and so he...
The little guy.
So he focuses on pitches within his strike zone. So you have to master the strike zone, of course, but because he's aware of his strengths, he's able to put the ball in play at key moments. And
but I've had a lot of little guys like that, like Freddie Sanchez and now Joe Panic.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of they call stay within themselves. Don't try to do too much. Take what the pitcher gives you.
Don't be like an Ere Egzianza, where you just focus on impressing your girlfriend.
Is that how he is? I think that kind of translates to other aspects of life. Know thyself. I'll just, with basketball, I'm more of a outside shooter. I'm not a post player that's going to muscle a bigger player. That's not my strength. So
once I try, pounds.
Yeah, with a 300-pound guy in the paint, if I try doing that, that's not going to do myself or my team any favors. And if I stop making my little outside shots, then I'll be, you know, more inclined to start passing it off and let other people use their strengths. And the other side of the coin is, if you know your own weaknesses, like, for example, the post game or whatever, being in the paint, you can work on those weaknesses and get better at them over time.
One of my strengths in basketball is rebounding.
Rebounding.
I'm the rebound guy.
Vicious rebounder.
Yeah. Yes.
Stick to it.
So I just stick with that. That's all I do. No one gives me the ball to shoot, because I suck at making shots as a team when I play as a team. But
yeah, but also not just in sports, but like maybe with a job or something. Like we have a brother-in-law that's he's good at real estate, and he's very good, and he's outgoing, outspoken, and that caters to selling homes, because you have to talk to a lot of people. Whereas an introvert, like somebody that's going to be in engineering, they have to do a lot of analysis on their own. They have to take away all these distractions from other people, get a good analysis complete before maybe presenting it or giving input to some type of bigger report or something. So like an introvert, it's better to be sort of an engineer. That's strengths, weaknesses.
You can know thyself. You can apply all of these Zen Buddhist principles to not just sports, but in life as well. Instead of playing a game, how about we close with our brief summary or discussion about the Motley Fool investment conference that Steve Ocrates and I attended last month on February 25th. Steve Ocrates 9C, my droid, and I had the pleasure of attending an investing conference in my neck of the woods, and it was hosted by The Motley Fool, which is a private financial services company based in Alexandria, Virginia, founded by David and Tom Gardner in 1993. Their popular slogan is, "To help the world invest better."
But we're not plugging anything.
No, we're not. Of course not. It's not like Chris Hill's listening to this episode or anything and getting warm, fuzzy feelings inside. Yeah, we love you.
Love you, man.
We actually met one of the co-founders, Tom Gardner, and he signed one of their books that they've written. I have it right here. Should I read it?
Sure.
Sure.
This is from the book, The Motley Fool Million Dollar Portfolio, How to Build and Grow a Panic-Proof Investment Portfolio, free of Joe Panic. Albert, a pleasure meeting a true fool. Best of luck with investing and in life. Tom Gardner.
Very heartfelt.
Yeah.
He called you a fool.
A fool with a capital F. There's a
pities the fool.
Philosophy of the fool in investing.
That was nice of him. He was taking his time to talk to everybody that wanted to talk to him. He asked, or we said, oh, we're brothers here. And the founders, right? Him, Tom, and Dave Gardner, brothers, founders. So they, you know, kind of made that connection that we are brothers, and they started out investing together. So it was good of him.
Yeah.
You tell them your rags to riches story.
I think we're still in the rag stage.
Rags to mended clothes.
Yeah, the clothes are mended.
Rags to sewn rags, patched together rags. Tom is very, he's in the moment. He interacts with people very well. He has good communication skills. He's interested in knowing who you are, your background, what you do for a living.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what is kind of drives his business, or the Motley Fools, because he wants to get rid of this whole stigma that investing is a scary thing that none of us should know about. Yeah. So they not really that at all.
They definitely have a genuine concern or care for people to learn how to invest better, to educate them, and to at the same time amuse and entertain.
And that's why it's called the Fools, because the layman or the public, we're supposed to be the fools that don't know any better, whereas those wise pundits out there, they're the ones who are supposed to, we should leave all our money to them because they're wise, and obviously they know more than us. But through his basic valuation fundamentals of these companies, it's really not that complicated at all.
Any fool could learn how to manage their own money. It makes sense. Why give your money to idiots, or not idiots, but sharks? I mean, definitely they're educated and they know what they're doing, but you should be in control. You should be self-empowered. You should learn how to manage your own money. That's what their services are all about, educating the public on how to invest your money on your own.
What they talk about at the
So the conference, the two people that they interviewed, Tom Gardner interviewed Jay Cherie. She's a CEO of Arista Networks, a computer networking company that is headquartered in Santa Clara. Then Chris Hill interviewed Brad Stone, an American journalist and author of many books. His most recent one is called The Upstarts: How Uber, Airbnb, and the Killer Companies of the New Silicon Valley Are Changing the World. So those were the two main speakers of the event, but there were also several breakout sessions that focused on different aspects of investing, retirement, how to generate income through dividend stocks, options, learning.
Yeah, and we participated in the options breakout that was ran by or Jeff Fisher was the one who held the discussion. We spent some time talking with Jeff Fisher, and he's pretty knowledgeable about options. We're trying to chase him away. There was a couple folks that were kind of like at his side at all times, so we tried to help him out there.
Parasite fish.
Yeah, that was one of the downfalls of the conference. I've been wanting to talk to Jeff Fisher one-on-one and ask him questions about some companies and investment ideas and philosophy, but these two guys were always there,
yeah,
huddling around him.
Motley Fool groupies.
Motley Fool groupies.
Jeff Fisher definitely had a couple of groupies, but he was able to tell us about his experience when he met Orange Tea, a Donald Trump chicken.
Yeah, that's also an interesting story we should share. So the other founder of the Motley Fool, David Gardner, and Jeff Fisher and a couple other people actually had the opportunity to meet Donald Trump in the late 1990s.
Ooh. They had shorted the company, right? DJT, the ticker symbol.
At the time, so I thought it was interesting how even back then Donald Trump was full of himself. I mean, who names their company after their own initials?
And his daughter, Ivanka, said, Daddy, this company, Motley Fools, that I follow, they're actually betting against our company. Can you, like, go and scold them? And so Trump listened, you know, like a good father would do. And he was like, hey, Mr. Gardner, why don't you come on over and explain yourself? Why don't you believe in us?
Yeah, so Trump invited them over to Trump Towers to discuss his company. And I guess, well, we should explain what a short means.
Well, go ahead. You're more the expert.
What's a short?
There. Well, when you buy, okay, so the general idea is when you buy a stock, you believe that it's going to perform well. You're optimistic about its prospects. That's what it means to buy shares of a company. You're hopeful. That's the intent is to partake in the gains of the appreciation and value of the company. So you're quite optimistic. But when you short a company, you believe that the company is going to perform horribly.
Yeah, it's the opposite. You're
selling the company in advance thinking that it's going to go down in value.
That's why Ivanka and Trump were upset, because they're saying that your company is not going to do well. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
And
to make matters even worse, Trump actually took money from his company or something. Yeah. I guess he
borrowed money from his own company,
yeah. out of his very own company. So that wasn't a good sign. So not only did it not have good fundamentals, from a business perspective, he was actually taking money from his own company. So that was, as soon as the fools saw that, they're like, yeah, this is a no-brainer.
Racking in so much debt. It's going, and it already tanked a lot. I don't know, 30%, 50%.
And I think he was trying to convince them when they finally met up with Trump. Hey, it's got a beautiful marina. You know, it's a nice looking, it's a cool looking marina. How could you know? And so being the nice guys, they did actually buy back before it went out of business. But the fact is they sort of bailed out Mr. Trump.
They gave Trump the benefit of the doubt. They thought, okay, well, we did earn a decent return. So let's go ahead and close the short and give Trump an opportunity to reverse the course of his company and see if he will actually replenish the debt. But it turned out that it tanked and went bankrupt, and I guess the CEO of the company was fired.
Fired, yes. I mean, that's what Trump likes to do.
Fired. Yeah,
you're fired.
Fired.
So that was it with DJT.
Donald Jerk Trump.
Is
that what it stands for?
So Steve Ocrates and I shook hands. Jeff Fisher, and therefore Donald Trump.
Therefore, we also shook hands through Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
With Donald J. Trump. And apparently, he has a small hand.
Those hands can hit a golf ball 285 yards.
Yeah, so according to Jeff Fisher, Trump has small hands.
So I just can't let that go, can they?
So, no, it was kind of interesting to talk with Jeff. He kind of gave some good pointers, I think, about options, and that was an entertaining story. We were able to pull him away from, you know, his groupies for a little bit, but after we left, he was, again, the groupies went back. We also talked with Chris Hill. I think it was good because Alvarado really knows these guys from listening to the podcast. Chris Hill is the podcaster, right? The main broadcast podcaster, yeah, I guess.
He hosts the Motley Fool radio show, Market Foolery. So daily podcast for about 20 minutes. So I've been listening to his show for many years. So it was nice to finally meet him.
And ironically, they try to avoid politics. It's like the opposite of our podcast.
So they don't talk about politics at all?
No.
I think he makes it a point that he doesn't want to talk about politics.
So this is the Motley Fool podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But he had some good stories, too. He's from Boston, I think, and told us about one of his buddies or his dad's buddies that took this famous picture of Babe Ruth right before he passed, couple months before he passed away. Iconic photo. I think it was at Wrigley Field. Like, that's why he was asking if we'd ever been to Wrigley Field, but we just said, oh, our other brother, Paulito, he's been there.
So why did they take the picture of him from behind and not in front?
Oh, he was, I guess his face was decrepit from
haggard.
He died from cancer, right? So it just... Instead of, I guess originally he wanted to take his face, but he wanted to do justice to the legend himself, have folks remember him the right way, you know, not with this kind of wrinkled, pruned up face or something.
Alcoholic smoker.
Yeah, well, it's from cancer, so I don't know if it was from his bad habits or what happened, but probably.
Probably didn't help.
No.
Probably didn't help, yes. So, interesting.
So it was nice to meet some foolish analysts and members of the Motley Fool.
Yep.
Yep.
They do this every year? Is there another conference?
They do conference every year, different cities throughout the United States. I can't mention this one because it's top secret information where this is in
a dry location.
Very dry location. Yeah. Very arid. The air. Stifling air.
That's where your fortress of solitude is. Yes. Located, right? Yeah.
Inhaling all the particulates in the atmosphere. So shout out to Chris Hill, Jeff Fisher, and Tom Gardner.
Maybe one day they'll listen.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe in 20 years they'll dig up this one episode where we mentioned the Motley Fool. They did seem to express an interest in ASP Stuff Radio, both Jeff Fisher and Chris Hill.
Did you send them a clip?
I sent them the website. I sent them an email.
Did the site traffic go up?
I did see some increased hits, so I'm assuming that one of them surfing it.
So we increased from 3 to 4. Yeah. That was it.
Well, seriously, no. So before I sent the email, 0 hits, and then within the next 12 hours or so, there was 8 hits.
Immediately, Chris went in. I got to listen to these guys.
So listening, like, hold
on. Okay.
Well, about these Motley groupies.
Let's pretend I didn't talk to these people.
Yeah. Especially if they listen to that turkey episode.
Masturbate male turkeys.
Turkey jerky. Yeah, that might scare them.
Yeah.
Masturbate male turkeys.
Used up all the time.
So yeah. That is it.
Any final thoughts?
Closing thoughts, remarks, insightful words of wisdom to feed your audience members.
Know thyself.
Pauleta.
Consistency and depth.
And it's pronounced kaka, not kaka.
There we go. That's insightful.
That'll make sense in our next episode. So stay tuned in suspense. All right. So
all right, with that,
we are all stuffed up.
Masturbate male turkeys.
Masturbate male turkeys.
Those hands can hit a golf ball 285 yards.
Commiserate the kick to our economy.
However, it's a consummate, like a verb, like to make complete a marriage.
Maybe we could have somebody look up the proper
adjective. I'm thinking of a different word.
Yeah.